Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, is my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, very good. I mean, just fresh off last night's latest battering that Arsenal have handed out, emptying stadiums everywhere they go. Like, really is quite literal, that chant that they've got going now in the away end. Those Arsenal fans, is absolutely ludicrous the way that they're doing this. On the Patreon, I obviously went for it, trying to catch up in this pick 11 game that we've got going. I thought, you know what, Sheffield United Arsenal, I'm going for it. 5-0 Arsenal. And I was quite confident of that. So when it was 5-0 at half time, I was like, something's going to happen second half. Annoying that it ended up as 6 from my point of view. But yeah, I mean, this Premier League title race, mate, is as good as anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting, isn't it? And especially in a year where across Europe's big five leagues, at the very least, there isn't all that much excitement. Inter went 15 points clear at the top of Serie A last night. Bayer Leverkusen are 10 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga. Real Madrid look like they've got La Liga pretty much sewn up. PSG are 9 points clear at the top of Liga without playing particularly well in their last few games. So it's the one that really jumps out. I mean, the Primeira has a great title race as well, so that's worth pointing out. But across the big guns, it does feel like the Premier League is the one to watch in terms of the title race this year.
Yeah, look, it's the best league in the world anyway because of the quality that we've got there. There's no doubt about that. I just saw you raise your eyebrows. There's no doubt that the Premier League is the best league.
In terms of footballing quality, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you judge the best league in the world, yeah.
Well, I don't know, because there's a whole thing going on right now where the Darmstadt Ultra went on the pitch and there was a lot of Premier League fans being like, this is ridiculous. And I was like, well, that's what happens when you own your clubs and you care about it and season tickets are reasonable and all of these things. And I think that has a place, and there's a lot of that soul that the Premier League lacks at times. But in terms of pure footballing quality, yes, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a completely different conversation. I think when you're talking about like what is the best league in the world, like there is no doubt that like the Premier League is unrivaled when it comes to the showbiz side of it, the player by player comparisons across the other league of who's going to be the best, and now also the competitiveness and the quality of not just one team, but three teams, because all three of these teams, Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal, deserve to win the title this season because it's been relentless from all three. the current rankings, Liverpool 1, Manchester City 2, Arsenal 3, Liverpool a point clear of Man City, and Man City a point ahead of third placed Arsenal. Arsenal have the best goal difference because of these pummelings that they're handing out left, right, and centre. And I was trying to work out in my head, like, am I wavering in my feelings of where this title race is going? Because I've been pretty adamant throughout this that my personal ranking of how this ends is Man City 1, Liverpool 2, Arsenal 3. And I don't think that's changed. I think that remains. And it feels really harsh. And this morning, before recording this pod, I really had to take some time to think about this, because I was like, I can't just stick to my guns if it's not true anymore. Because what Arsenal are doing to teams, the way that they humiliated Sheffield United and won that game within 15 minutes is absolutely astounding, to be honest. But, okay, let's just look at the results from the past weekend, for example. Like, Arsenal go and do that to Sheffield United, brilliant. Liverpool get a different kind of win. They dig deep. They keep going. There's that relentless intent to get the points, and somehow they get there. 99th minute, Darwin Nunez winner, unbelievable scenes. And then there's Man City's win, where they've gone behind in a Manchester derby, their biggest game of the season, probably because of the extra pressure and expectation that's on them to win that game, even when they're expected to. Go behind to the best goal Marcus Rashford will ever score in his life, yet put on the most dominant display of football you could really hope to see. Absolutely batter the United goal, open up chance after chance, and in the end, their patience pays off, and they get the three goals and they win the Manchester derby comfortably. And within that, you've got an exceptional performance from Phil Foden. And I think that when I analyse this right now, I think back to when City were having their little spell and they were wavering a little bit and people were questioning whether City would win the league. I remember Pep Guardiola saying, there's still full belief in this team. Like, you can judge us now if you want, but we'll believe that we can do this. And when he said we can do this, he was being questioned on, can they make history? Because this will be a fourth consecutive Premier League title for Manchester City, which nobody has ever done.
Never achieved, yeah.
And I don't know if I expected City to have to put up this much of a fight to actually claim that. And they're going to have to dig deep. And obviously, we're going to see that more than ever over the coming weeks. But just to lay the landscape here, Manchester City obviously play against Liverpool at the weekend in a cannot-miss affair. And then after that, Manchester City have a home fixture against Arsenal. So these next 2 weeks really will define just what City are made of. And I do expect them to rise to these occasions. It's really, really hard to separate them. But ultimately, I think when I think, okay, Man City, what am I seeing? Haaland, okay, might be off the boil a little bit, but is Erling Haaland? You've got Kevin De Bruyne coming back into fitness, and we've already seen over the course of his comeback a couple of unbelievable displays. Phil Foden playing the best footballer of his life. And then you run it a bit deeper. You've got Bernardo Silva playing well. You've got Rodri, one of the best in his role in the game. You've got John Stones back in the team now. And of course, the other two have exceptional talents, and they have traits that are really, really admirable. But over the course of this run-in, I still can't get away from the fact that Man City are the best team, and Man City have a 5-game run-in at the end of the season when they face Forest, Wolves, Fulham, West Ham and Brighton, where I just can't see them letting up. And so it's these next two games, really, Jack, that if City are going to slip up and the door is going to open for a new champion, Liverpool or Arsenal or both are going to have to come up with big wins.
The thing I've noticed is that Aston Villa and Tottenham have to play all of them. So that's exciting. I can't see a world where one of those two teams doesn't have a say on this title race. If you were to say to me right now, what are the odds of all three of Arsenal, City and Liverpool getting 6 points from their games against Villa and Tottenham, I would say they're very high. And I think that that's going to be a really interesting development across the course of it, of how this one plays out, because obviously there are, you know, local rivalries entitled in that, you know, intertwined. But more than that, I just feel like Tottenham are the kind of team who can upset the apple cart for big units, because look, we've already seen them do it to City this year. We've already seen them do it to Liverpool this year. Okay, albeit in massively controversial circumstances. But I just feel like they are the kind of side under Ange Postecoglou who will relish those big occasions. And I think that's going to be really, really interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Yeah, and I'd run it a little differently too. I mean, Fulham, our very own Fulham, have home fixtures against Liverpool and Manchester City still to come. And another factor that I did weigh into this is that obviously we've seen us play against these teams already this season, but Liverpool especially, because we've had more games against them because of the cup. And we've come so close. And I was like, here's the thing. Like when Liverpool come to Fulham, there's going to be a part of me that thinks, come on, boys, get something out of this today. We could have our own say in the title race here. When Man City come to town, I never have that feeling. And I don't think I'll have it this. It would be our last home game of the season, right? Man City. And we're in good form at the moment. We've had a decent season. Won't be going down. It'll be a last home game where you think, right, a last hurrah. I just can't see me turning up to a game against Man City expecting us to get anything from it. And I just wonder if there's that mentality that is a natural thing that's ingrained in me over the course of the last few years that must also be in other fan bases, other teams.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's something worth considering. And but yeah, obviously Arsenal have come to the Cottage and been handed a lesson, but it was the last time that Arsenal have really slipped up since then. So it's going to be interesting to see what those kind of games. There's other games in there as well, you know, not just Fulham, but you think of someone like Wolves as well, who have been, you know, punching above their weight. You look at, you know, when we're talking about these different games, Arsenal have to go to City, obviously, but they have to go to Brighton, they have to go to Wolves, and they have to go to Old Trafford, and they have to go to Tottenham. They're not easier ways. But the way that this Arsenal team is playing right now, do you doubt them to beat any of those? I think it's very hard to suggest that they wouldn't. Anyway, before we move on, I do think that we should. Let's go on to quickly the UEFA Champions League and the Conference League and the Europa League as well, because yesterday it was made official that the change is coming in 2024-25. We kind of already knew about this, that there was going to be changes made from the group stages, which will no longer exist. And instead, we're going to a league team format in all three competitions, 36 teams in each of the three European competitions. It's not the easiest concept to explain, but basically, everyone will be put into four pots in the Champions League and the Europa League. And teams will be drawn against eight different opponents. They'll play four home games and four away games, one home and one away each against a team from pot 1, 2, 3, and 4, which will be done on the seedings. In the Conference League, it's a bit different. There's six pots and you'll play one team from each of the six pots in the Conference League. So that won't have quite as many fixtures. And then basically it becomes a league system. All teams compete in one league. The top eight will qualify automatically for the last 16. The teams that finish ninth to 24th will play each other in a knockout playoff, with the winners of those games joining the top eight in the round of 16. And then at that point, the knockout stage kind of goes back to how we know it. It goes to last 16, home and away legs, two legs, and a single game final. It's all a bit wild. And considering how much we've enjoyed, I think, the Champions League format since that change from two group stages, which was made around the turn of the century, it's been a format that we've come to love. Part of me is a bit concerned about this, and I have my real concerns about the extra games being thrown into the calendar in a time where managers are talking about having too many fixtures and there's more club competitions coming on. There's an expanded Club World Cup. There's moves to try and make the World Cup every 2 years. I don't think that's going to go through, but it is what it is. It does feel like the schedule is bunching up even further, but part of me does quite like this format, I've got to say.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how you'd feel about it, actually.
I was kind of hoping the Europa League and Conference League would stay in the old format and just be kind of an antithesis to see at least how the Champions League dealt with it, and then if it was very successful, move over. But
I think I'm okay with it. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, generally, there's always a stubbornness to change in the more open world, but quite often it does work out for the better, and there are benefits to it. So I'm skeptical / open-minded, I think, about this at the moment. I hope it's being done for the right reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I very much doubt it's being done for the right reasons. I'm kind of trying to put that aside and just think, is this going to be entertaining? And I think it might be. I think it might be a concept. Well, I don't think football was supposed to be the winner, but it might just sort of like on the side accidentally become the winner.
Side hustle winner.
That I'm kind of on board with. Yeah, we got a question to try and explain this new format a little bit and give our thoughts on it. So I thought I would stick this in just at this segment. But yeah, I'm pretty open-minded as to how this works. And I think that, look, more teams competing in European competition, I know that some people think that diminishes the value of it. I don't really. I think the more teams you get into these experiences and the more fan bases that get to experience, even in the Conference League and, you know, working their way up, that's a great thing for football. And I hope that what happens here is it's not just more and more teams from the Premier League and La Liga and Serie A. I hope they get a little bit more. But I hope that it also expands this format out to the rest of Europe, because I think that there are unbelievable atmospheres and experiences waiting for people if we can get this right. And hopefully UEFA do get this right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. With that, I think it's probably time for us to end this first segment. After the break, we're going to be talking about five players who could quit the Premier League this summer. Transfer guru Dean Jones back in his element. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks AFC, and it's time to get stuck in to some of the players who might be leaving the shores of England this summer, who might be heading elsewhere away from the joys of Dean's self-confessed best league in the world. DJ, over to you.
Yep, indeed. There's some big decisions to be made here, some dilemmas for clubs, some dilemmas for players, and in no small part, it will probably be due that pesky Saudi Pro League, which is threatening version 2, where they come and nab all your players and give you some dough on the side for it. So this is interesting ranking. It's came to my attention. I'm writing a column for Give Me Sport and come up with a few different ideas about what you can write about. And this was one of the ones that's kind of doing for this week, and I thought, you know what, this could make a pretty good podcast for just doing a slightly different format. So here we are. Now, the way I've gone about the ranking, these are all high profile players at big Premier League clubs. But in terms of the ranking itself, I've tried to take it away necessarily from the biggest profile departure and more on what I think the impact would be of their departure in terms of being the most significant. So
very good.
To get the list started, there's kind of three names that I've been jostling around with. And I think I know what's going in. I'll just check that you agree. So obviously Casemiro is highly likely to be leaving Man United if they can make that happen. And probably Saudi is going to be his destination. And obviously that's a high profile player, someone who has at times had a significant impact on this team and at times, not so much. But still, to lose him would be pretty big. But also, there's a threat of Kieran Trippier. That'll be back. Obviously, there was the stories around Bayern Munich in January. Definitely had his head turned around that move. And also, Richarlison leaving Tottenham. The threat of that hasn't gone away. Again, most likely to be Saudi Arabia that would come knocking for Richarlison. I think if I was to put this into the kind of order that I've done with the others and consider impact, I think it's Kieran Trippier out of those three that has the biggest impact on a team, because Casemiro, yeah, at times has obviously been very significant at the heart of the United midfield. He's this season helping Kobbie Mainoo with his development. Richarlison, to be fair to him, like, has actually had a hot spell of form across this calendar year, but still feels like a player that you could probably move on from and live without. And Kieran Trippier, while I do think if you were to lose him, then this is okay, they're going to be missing something that he brings, not just to the football pitch, but probably to the dressing room and to training, and has an essence about him, which was an underlying foundation of why Newcastle have actually got to this point. So I think at five, I'm going Kieran Trippier.
Yeah, I think I would be tempted to put Richarlison in ahead of him. I'm not going to lie, but I do completely understand where you're coming from. The thing is, it comes down to how you replace them. And actually, in some ways, Casemiro is the one that you go, well, United are going to have to get a body in there and someone experienced, as well as someone who can try and fill that leadership gap. Now, I think there are players who can do this. And in a couple of weeks, in a quick ranks, we're going to talk about some free agents. And I've got an idea as how United fill this gap. But I think that when you're talking about leadership in the dressing room, definitely Trippier fills out. But Tino Livramento is a ready-made replacement who's already playing well in this team. And I think that will come out nicely. And that transition period should be a relatively smooth handover. I actually think Richarlison as a loss would be maybe more impactful on the pitch than any of the other two departing these shores.
Yeah, I guess with the Casemiro one, another reason the impact of his departure might be felt is because they'll probably lose Eriksen and Amrabat as well. And so, again, United have got a void there to fill. Now, obviously, like, none of those three are pulling up trees at the moment. Probably are best moving on to something fresh and new and younger. But still, I think it is significant. It is worth addressing. And most telling of all, there we've got three really good, big Premier League names that could all feasibly leave the league this summer. And I think that is pretty telling. But to get into the proper ranking, at number four, I've gone for Raheem Sterling. Premier League legend, is that too much?
No, I don't think it's too much at all. I think it's absolutely fine when you look at what Raheem's done and what he's achieved. Now, Chelsea fans will be screaming down their headphones, I imagine, right now, being like, how could you say that after what he's done this year? But you look at the body of work, you look at the resume and look what he achieved at Manchester City. I don't think there's any doubt in my head whatsoever that he's worthy of that kind of status.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because you've kind of reassured me that I'm on the right path with this one. I mean, what he did, yeah, with Manchester City and asserting himself on one of the best teams we've ever seen, and the Guardiola way of playing and changing his game and taking criticism on board and all these different things that he's had to deal with. Obviously, he's taken a lot of stick throughout his career. There was all the stuff about being a snake, being driven by money. And I think actually across his career, Raheem Sterling's done a really good job of trying to just stay on the straight and narrow in football, try and keep himself out of the front pages of newspapers, stay on the back pages of newspapers. And just
even when,
be the
even
best
when that was incredibly
can.
Difficult and there was a bit of a Raheem Sterling witch hunt, Luiz has carried himself really, really well. And look, you add that to what, 120 odd Premier League goals? He's in the 100 club. He's made over nearly 400 appearances. It's going to be one where you look back and people will be like, what a player Raheem Sterling was. And, you know, I don't think underappreciating his time is fair, because I actually think that he got a lot of the plaudits eventually that he really deserved. But it took some time. And what he did off the pitch as well, in terms of standing up for himself and basically going, well, I don't know why the papers keep coming after me, and helping to change that narrative and dynamic, I think, between not just players and journalists, but also I think was a key part in changing the narrative around England's football team and that relationship with the media as well. All of this will go down as sort of things that happened off the pitch, but I think they're all relevant to Raheem Sterling's legend and why he should go down as one of the greats.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been rumours in the past couple of weeks about Raheem Sterling and the Saudi Pro League, and they have been played down, okay? So let's put that out there first. It has been played down. But that might be the case right now. And I think from Sterling's point of view, his representative's point of view, even Chelsea's point of view, that's the way you need it right now. There's no point speculating about whether Raheem Sterling is staying or not. Other information that I've heard, which is pretty well sourced, to be honest, is that Chelsea will be open to considering a departure of Raheem Sterling into the season. And also from other sources that the Saudi Pro League are absolutely going to, at the very least, make him an offer. And it's up to him. Like, if he doesn't fancy, he doesn't fancy it. But it's going to have the option there to go and play in Saudi Arabia. I would like it, to be honest, if he also has some European offers on the table here, because I'd love to see Raheem Sterling go and test himself on the continent in another league that isn't the Premier League. Like, I'd actually be a bit like, as much as he is a Premier League legend, at this point, because the Chelsea spell has been a bit meh, I don't really want him to go to another Premier League club and do that again. He might light up again, but I just feel like it would be cool to see Raheem outside of the Premier League for a bit at this stage of his career. He's got 8 goals and 9 assists across his season. I don't think it would be too harsh to say he's had a very frustrating time, though. He just can't get any consistency, can he? And I guess it will come down a lot to his own personal appetite for what he wants now from his career. But yeah, number four, the exit of Raheem Sterling from the Premier League, I think there's a realistic chance of it happening. And I think there's a pretty big impact to be felt generally across the Premier League. But the reason is at four is because it's not really going to affect Chelsea, is it? Because he just hasn't stamped his authority on that team.
Yeah, although we have spoken about the lack of leadership and experience at Chelsea over the last few weeks, and to lose another player in that mould.
I don't
especially
think he's shown it though, has he? I think that that's
not
part of my disappointment.
But Thiago Silva, I think, will probably be departing this summer as well. That's another big experience loss, and how Chelsea feel that is going to be very, very interesting, because even if he hasn't, you know, displayed all of that on the pitch this season, as you say, and rightly say, there is also that element of what it means in the dressing room and what it means to young players and someone like Cole Palmer, who obviously will know Raheem Sterling from his time at City and will have, you know, gone in there with a face in the dressing room that he knows and can get behind, and who also has been there and done it at the highest levels for both club and country over the past couple of years. So I think it's an interesting one. Part of me is very intrigued to see what happens at Bayern this summer, because whoever comes in next after Thomas Tuchel will have a rebuilding job on their hands. The Serge Gnabry and Leroy Sané kind of experiments in many ways feel like they haven't gone quite to plan for what Bayern wanted. And I wonder, with the success of Harry Kane coming in there at this kind of age, Raheem Sterling will be 30 next December. If they're looking to bring in someone who can, you know, help maybe shape this next period and get them through this phase to go there alongside Harry Kane, I'd be wondering if Bayern would stick in a bid for what, 25, 30 million? And if that might be enough to turn Chelsea's head on Raheem Sterling.
Oh, interesting one. Yeah, interesting one. Haven't considered that prospect, but yeah, there's definitely, if it's he's seen to be available, then I refuse to believe that there won't be opportunities that open up for him like that. And
I think Barcelona would be very interested, but I just don't think they can afford him.
Yeah. I don't know that he'll go for the Saudi money.
Yeah, part of me thinks he won't either.
And that's
actually a lot of me thinks he won't.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. But yeah, I do think there's a chance that he's not in the Premier League next season. So we'll have to see. At number three, you might be a little surprised, I guess, that I've got him this high. I've got Raphael Varane.
Wow, that is high.
Do you know what? I think the presence of Raphael Varane at Man United is underrated and underestimated. When you consider all the things that Man United lack, and you talk about seniority and leadership at Chelsea, well, they lack that at Man United as well. And I think at a time of change at Old Trafford, with Ineos coming in and starting to overhaul the football side of things, Erik ten Hag's job security uncertain, big change is going to happen across that team. We'll certainly see personnel changes in the summer, and that will include, you know, people beyond Rafael Varane at the back. But there's a lot of doubt around Rafael Varane staying this season. He has played 90 minutes in 8 of the last 9 of Man United's Premier League games. He has played 90 minutes in all 3 of Man United's FA Cup fixtures so far this season. And that recent run, I think, kind of pours cold water over this narrative that he's done. And I kind of watch him, I was even watching him at times in the Manchester Derby at the weekend, the way he's reading the game, the way he was sweeping things up. I'm not saying like he was like it wasn't a monstrous performance from Varane, but he's got something that Man United don't have. And if you're losing Casemiro, if you're losing Eriksen, if you're losing Amrabat, if you're going to lose all these other players across this squad, somewhere you've got to think, hang on, we do need some leadership. Man United haven't got that many players in their squad around the age of 30 or above. Varane is 30. And I know there's this infamous rings in his legs discussion because he started so young and everything else. But I just think
infamous on Ranks FC because we've been it really is
our own story. But I think he would be amiss, and I think United would feel the impact of Rafael Varane because replacing him isn't going to be that easy, and you're going to be buying someone that might have more longevity in the game, might have a higher ceiling across the next 5 years. But we've seen with Chelsea how difficult it is to buy young, up-and-coming, highly rated defenders in their 20s, early 20s, and be brought together in a team. And personally, I think that Varane basically could do with one more year at Man United while they just oversee this period of transition. But the narrative does feel like this will be it, and he probably will move. Look, whether that's a return to Lons, I don't know. There don't seem to be that many openings for him at this current stage.
Al Nassr are in, aren't they? And third reunion with Cristiano Ronaldo.
There you go. There's reasons I could obviously see him taking that. I don't know. I just put him above Raheem Sterling because I feel like he'll be a bigger loss.
I can understand that from an individual club perspective, I think. Even if Varane hasn't been at his best, there is an element, again, of coaching and bringing young players through. Last summer, I suggested, when it looked like Harry Maguire was off from Manchester United and they were going to have that money to spend, I thought that a year where Jean-Claire Todibo got his legs under the table, his feet under the table, I should say, and was underneath the tutelage of another legendary French defender in Raphael Varane would be a very good succession plan for Manchester United that would allow Todibo to get stuck in and get settled at United whilst having a mentor figure, because it is a difficult place. And look, some people freeze when they get to Old Trafford. There's no doubt about it that in difficult circumstances, it's also an incredibly pressurized place to play. And it's hard for players to stand up and be counted in those scenarios. So I did think that that was an interesting one, but that would also be the natural replacement. I just feel like United are not doing this period well. You know, it should be, look, they found Kobbie Mainoo and he came through and exploded into life, and that's great. And he's now had this year under Casemiro that will help with that transition period. But really, if they were planning on Casemiro leaving this summer, maybe they weren't. Maybe the drop-off has been starker than United originally expected. Then they should have brought someone in who they thought was the long-term successor, you know, and they'll... People will point to that and be like, yeah, they definitely knew that Mainoo was this good. I won't buy that yet. until you hear it from the higher echelons of the club, and a club that has been basically dysfunctional from the top to the bottom for the last couple of years, I think that's a stroke of luck. Now, it's a great stroke of luck for United and United fans. But I think that when you're looking at these succession plans, they need to be better at this. And that's probably why I agree with you, that if they could get Varane to do one more year whilst bringing in a successor, it would probably be for the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Manchester Derby, Johnny Evans playing again in a Manchester Derby,
they have had incredibly bad luck with injuries, right? And that's fair to say, but it also is a revelation of a squad that hasn't been built correctly. Both things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's fair to say Ineos didn't want Casemiro or Varane going in January for that experience and leadership and stability reasons. And while I think you're okay to let Casemiro go, I've just got a bit more reservation around Varane. But he is in this list because there is a strong chance that this is Rafael Varane's last season in the Premier League. Let's move on to number two, and a undoubted Premier League legend remains as a Premier League superstar. Mo Salah could leave the Premier League this summer.
Good.
I mean, there are reasons to seriously contemplate this both ways, I think, from Liverpool's perspective. And I don't know which way I fall yet on which is the best option to take. I think when you consider that a £150 million offer was on the table last year to take Mo Salah from Liverpool to Al Ittihad in Saudi Arabia, and it was dismissed out of hand. Like, Liverpool had no time for it at all, discarded it, moved on, didn't want to talk about it ever again. They're going to have to talk about it again because another offer's going to be on the table, but don't know yet quite the value of it. Now, obviously, the furniture's been moved around a little bit at Anfield recently, and Jurgen Klopp is going to be removed from the building on his own accord. He's taken himself out of the environment. He's going to leave Liverpool. You're like, okay, you can live without him. You can, if you get this right, you can live without him. Managerially, if you can get Xavi Alonso, there's reasons you can make that work. But how do we feel about Mo Salah leaving and going to Saudi Arabia in that same summer that Jurgen Klopp's leaving? On one hand, you could argue that, yeah, if you're going to do it, then now's the time to reset.
Complete
right, Klopp's
oval.
Going, Salah can go, we go again, we start fresh, we can replace Salah, we'll get the money. We've already got like a handful of amazing forwards anyway. Even when he's not playing, we're winning games. We've had him for his peak years. Let's win the title and bid him farewell. But keeping Salah has to obviously be a consideration too, because you want to have that stability beyond Klopp. You don't want that team to suddenly fall apart. Yeah, I also feel, and I've spoken to a couple of people about this recently, that if big money does come in for Salah, if his 350 grand a week contract is gone, if you are looking at keeping Virgil van Dijk and Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson, and you want to add a couple of new faces for the new manager, that helps massively in terms of doing it. Salah's 31. He's not going to get any better from here, but he could still have huge impact on the team going forward. I think Liverpool and Salah face a real conundrum if and when this offer lands next from the Saudi Pro League to take him over there. And I really am split on which way they should go.
I think that if £150 million lands on the table again, Liverpool would be a bit mad not to take it. Now, they've shown that they can rebuild from losing a key player. And look, I'm not comparing the careers of Coutinho and Salah at Liverpool, because one is far outstripping of the other. But there is a level that you've seen Liverpool rebuild this and make something more than, you know, the component parts with that money before. They've spent it well. They've spent it wisely. There aren't that many transfers at Liverpool that end up as complete duds. Mm. And obviously, there's a little bit of overhaul going on at the top of the structure as well. And bear in mind that Michael Edwards was in charge of a lot of that transfer business, and he's not there anymore, although FSG are making a big play to get him back and bring him into the even higher up in the echelons of power at Anfield and Kirby. But when you kind of look at what they could do with that, when you look at the amount of talent that is in this side as well, I do think that if that offer landed again, Liverpool would be insane not to take it, because it would basically provide the funds for whoever this next manager is to, as you say, overhaul the squad in the way that they want. And that doesn't mean getting rid of everybody, but it means strengthening the parts of the squad that they feel are weak. And as you say, there's a new generation coming through. We've seen a lot of young talent who won't be, you know, first team superstars straight away, all of them at the very least, but there is young talent coming through there. It would allow Liverpool to nitpick exactly what they want next summer. And I think that could be a very, very interesting summer if Salah was to go and that 150 million becomes the bedrock of how Liverpool redefine the next era. That's a really intriguing place to be, although I do appreciate that it's a little bit Football Manager.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it would be 150 million pounds again, if I'm honest, but I think you consider that when Salah joined Liverpool in 2017, it was for an initial 36 million pounds rising to 43 million pounds, right? So say it was it must have been 43 million pounds in the end. I don't see how Salah wouldn't have reached his objective. Yeah. but so even if an 86 million pound bid came in, you're doubling your money on a player that you bought like 7 years ago. And it's going to be more than that anyway. So say it was 100 million, like you've still more than doubled your money on the player. You've had his peak years and then you've got 100 million to invest into the squad again. Do you know what? I think I'd sell him.
I think I would too, but with a heavy heart.
Tough, tough decision. It's going to depend. Like, say it is Xavi Alonso. If he comes in, he's like, well, I want Mo Salah to stay. You're like, okay. Can Luis Diaz go? Maybe.
Well, no, but if he wants to bring in Florian Wirtz and, you know, and they're looking at different ways of doing things, then
that's the thing. You think like he'll want his own team, right? He'll have to change. He'll have to come away a bit from what Klopp's done. You're not going to throw it all in the bin, but it's that. You've got to be your own man and go about this job in your own way. And you don't want to lose Van Dijk. You probably don't want to lose Trent. Maybe you'd lose Salah. Right, let's move on to number one. The most impactful exit from the Premier League that I think we could see is Bruno Guimarães from Newcastle United.
Yeah.
Now, obviously in terms of name, he's not there with Mo Salah. But this is a 26-year-old midfielder who is or is coming into his peak years. And he's brilliant, isn't he? Like, Bruno is...
He's sensational, yeah.
A sensational midfielder. And Newcastle obviously do not want to lose this player. But they're in a bit of a mess. And they've put themselves in this mess with their performances across this season. Because Bruno Guimarães needs to be competing at the very top level. And he will be striving to do that with Newcastle. In fact, he recently said that his full intention is to win silverware with Newcastle. That is his career goal. But at the moment, unless they win the FA Cup and they've got Manchester City in the quarterfinal, they're not winning silverware this season. They're looking like a team that is going to finish where in the Premier League? Eighth? Ninth? I don't even know. But they could do.
Yeah, I think they will finish in the European spots, but it's not
a given. Potentially not, and that's a worry. And if they didn't have European football, if they didn't have a trophy from this season, then they are in a position whereby I think their resolve will be tested around Bruno Guimarães. And PSG have an eye on this situation. We've known that for some time. The good news is for Newcastle that they're not just going to lose this player on the cheap. He's got a release clause in and it's going to cost like £100 million if PSG are going to actually take him away. So I guess it's not the end of the world because you can try to replace him with that. But if you think back to January, Newcastle's chief exec came out and was kind of warning that they might need to sell some of their players in order to get around the profit and sustainability guidelines in the Premier League and might need to remodel the side a little bit. And even in those moments, I was kind of reassured that Guimarães wouldn't be sold, Botman wouldn't be sold, Isak wouldn't be sold.
Yeah, they're trying to keep the spine.
Yeah, and I believe that, because if you do start taking that apart, then you're probably going backwards, especially with Guimarães and Isak. But It's pretty harsh on Botman. I'm going to actually include him back in that conversation.
Yeah, I was going to wait for you to do it yourself. Yeah, it feel like one of those where you'd come to yourself.
All three of them, right? Like, yeah. They've been so important to what they've done. And you want to build on that. You don't want to replace that. You want to build on that. But yeah, I think at a time when obviously Kylian Mbappe is leaving Paris Saint-Germain, he's going to be joining Real Madrid. We can see he's now spending more time on the subs bench and in the stand at PSG than he is in the actual team. And it seems the club are like, we have to start thinking about how we move beyond this guy, because they're going to win Liga anyway. So it probably helps them with this experiment. But Mbappe's not going to be there. So what do they do next? And it doesn't necessarily become a like-for-like replacement. It could be a couple of people that come into that team as like the new talisman. They've obviously got some really good players coming into this team. Like, you wax lyrical all the time about Zaire Emery and like what he can become.
Yeah. And Vitinha, who I think...
Vitinha, yeah. And so I don't know that this bid definitely lands, but there's going to be interest in taking Bruno away from Newcastle, especially if they've failed on all fronts this season. If this team looks like it's a bit vulnerable and that you can swoop and you can take away a few of their players.
Yeah.
Then
the vultures will come circling as soon as they smell blood, right? It's as simple as that. And it's not.
And I think it'd be a massive loss on this team.
Yeah, well, it's not slight on Newcastle because, you know, they have caveats to why this season has been incredibly difficult. There have been problems and there have been performances that haven't been up to scratch. There have also been injuries and suspensions and things that have impacted them. But I think that most Newcastle fans, whilst appreciating that, you know, this season hasn't been hugely brilliant outside of that massive European win and some of those brilliant nights, I think they will also understand that, be like, okay, the project moves forward in various stages. The problem is that the players who are coming in are going, well, my guarantees for next season. And then it comes back to the debate about, well, who's in charge of this team next year? What can they do in the summer? Where are they with FFP? What can they... And I think that plays a huge part of it, this concern about financial constraints, because obviously they're being monitored, you know, arguably more heavily than anybody else, considering the funds that have been or have the ability to come into play here. What happens with this? And do Newcastle need to sell to invest? They're all questions that come into play. And I think that all impacts Bruno's future. But you're right. If they're not playing European football in some capacity next season, then loads of teams are going to be like, well, that's a Champions League player right there. Why isn't he playing at the level that he should be? And as you say, their resolve will be tested. Whether that's enough to break it or not is a different question. But I think you're absolutely right to put him top of this list. No, he is not the best player in the five that you've done, because Mo Salah has earned that mantle with what he's achieved over the last years. But in terms of impact on a side and losing a player in their prime at a key point in a project, I think this would be the most impactful. I think you're right.
It's very important what Newcastle did last year to get him to renew a contract like that. That's going to prove pivotal. But yeah, an offer to play Champions League football at a club that's going to be in the latter stages of the tournament, to go and have the prospect of joining a team that will win silverware, not just challenge for it, will win silverware. That's going to test him as well, and in terms of what he wants to do. And as much as he might love Newcastle and believe in what they're trying to do, if they take two steps back this season, then yeah, it's going to get a little bit testy.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very interesting summer indeed. Well, thank you very much, DJ. They are five, or more than five, actually, big names who might be departing for distant shores, shall we say. It's going to be interesting to see how all of those clubs, or some of those clubs, deal with those exits as and when they come. Right, after the break, we've got some more club picking on Guru Wisdom. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our third and final segment, where we're going to be helping people pick clubs. Remember, we've done two now. And if you want to get involved, you can drop us a DM on Twitter or Instagram, or send an email to us, footballranks@gmail.com. And we'll try and work our way through them. Dean, I've got some news from last week. because Aiden went with Atalanta.
Did he?
He said, after consideration and watching this weekend, I think Atalanta may be the team for me, even though they lost to Bologna, which was another great choice. I appreciate the play style and history to Atalanta a lot after doing my research, and I appreciate all your help again, lads.
He watched them lose and then picked them.
That's my kind of guy. That's why I like Aiden. Well, let's get the boys involved.
Guru wisdom.
Very good. Thanks, lads. Very good. Appreciate it. This week, we got Mitch. Mitch in the emails. Mitch Hutchinson has sent us an email. He says, hey, Jack and Dean, big congratulations on the big Fulham win at Old Trafford. He did send this in last week. He said, about me, I'm from the USA and I grew up my whole life in the state of Louisiana, which is a state rich in culture and a resilient spirit. I'm a fan of LSU, New Orleans Saints and New Orleans Pelicans. I moved to North Carolina a few years back and I'm a Charlotte FC fan and I've loved being a fan from the offset of the club. I had a bunch of friends that when I was in middle school, they were Arsenal and Chelsea fans. And so I decided I wanted to become a Premier League fan and I picked the team. This was around 2008, 2009. I was determined to pick a team that was more of an underdog, but maybe had some exciting players and was fighting to get in with the big dogs. Funny enough, I picked Manchester City. I had no idea about the takeover and I just picked them because I fell in love with Steven Ireland and Robinho while Mark Hughes was there and they were very middle in the pack / not very good. Typically, I would not have chosen them knowing what I know now, but I'm also a very committed and loyal person and I have enjoyed the Pep years. If I was to choose a Premier League today, I'd probably fancy Brighton, Villa or Wolves to get behind. I love the play style of Emery and De Zerbi and how they're really invested coaches. I love teams that are active in the transfer market and know how to spot a hidden gem. I love history and geography, so maybe some clubs with a rich history might be good for me. And I don't want to go for the big guys like PSG, Bayern or Madrid, but I'd be okay with somebody knocking on the door that wouldn't make me a bandwagon fan. I love counter-attacking football and not the biggest on the parking the bus style. My favourite players through the years, Tevez, Gundogan, Di Natale, De Rossi and Samuel Eto'o. My least favourite, Danny Rose, Nicholas Bentner and Scott McTominay. Niche. I'm in search of a team to support in La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga and Ligue 1. Thanks a million, Mitchy. Brilliant. Mitch, wow, is one of our lore patrons as well. So shouts out to Mitch. Great, great guy. And we're going to try our best to help here. I'm going to start in Serie A because I think the answer in Serie A is staring me in the face. And the others are more complicated. Okay. But with a man who's just named Daniele De Rossi as one of his favourite players down the years in search of a club with a rich history and in a very, very cool city, it makes a lot of sense for Roma here for me. I don't think that there's loads jumping out of me that isn't Roma, but that feels like a nice fit here for Mitch to start things off.
Yeah, of course. Like, why not head to Rome? He wants some history and culture, and he loves the man himself. So it's a no-brainer, that one, mate.
That one feels right. The rest of them are more difficult, I think. The rest of them are more difficult. Should we go to La Liga, where things are a little bit more difficult? Part of me. Thinks Atleti, although he did say he doesn't like the old park the bus style.
Yeah, I've got Sevilla in my head.
I mean, and I can't endorse that. I literally can't be out here endorsing it, but I will appreciate your opinion.
It's more because of, like, first and foremost, Sevilla are down in 14th in La Liga this season. So you can get on board a team when they're at a low point. Right. Sevilla typically are not going to be having this sort of season in future years, and they will be knocking on the door again of top four or five and have the potential in terms of the size of the club to go bigger than that. Seville, unbelievable city.
Yeah.
Stadium, unbelievable. Big potential. In terms of the playing style being close to Emery or De Zerbi. No, but like they do come up with weird quirks of play, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're a funny side. And Luca Romero is having an incredible season since he came in from the B team setup in January. He's been a revelation in so many ways. They're fun. Look, I mean, I'd open that conversation up to both sides of the city of Seville. Now, obviously, I have a vested interest in Real Betis, but I feel like if you're going to go for one of those two clubs, you could probably go for the other as well. There's a lot in it and a lot in terms of challenging. There's not much been between them in the last few years. Obviously, Betis have had a better couple of last seasons, and yet Sevilla are the ones who've come out with trophies. It's a little bit punchy. Pellegrini obviously has a link to Mitch's beloved Man City as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you could probably pick either side of the city of Seville right now. Neither are having brilliant seasons. I don't think Betis have done very much this season. They flattered to deceive in many ways, but there's a lot of fun from the transfer market in that regard. I think both of those would be reasonable choices.
Yeah. There you go, Mitch. You've got Sevilla on my side, Betis on Jack's side. I have no allegiance to Sevilla at all. That's just the one that I would have picked out of those two teams. Nothing against Jack. That's just, if I was to land in Spain and pick one of those teams, that's just the side of things I would have gone. Probably because I don't really like the colour green, to be honest. I don't want to wear green clothes. honestly, it could get as shallow as that. In Germany, Union Berlin. That's fun.
That's a hard sell right now. That's a hard sell right now.
Well,
Union Berlin have had three unbelievable. Union Berlin have had three unbelievable seasons, but you know it's easy to forget that this is a side probably reverting to the norm at this point. They're probably not going to be challenging for Champions League place again. On the flip of that, they are an unbelievable club with an unbelievable spirit, resilience, and something that Mitch mentioned, obviously, at the top there, that the story of Union Berlin and their rise through the divisions and basically the fans keeping the club alive in the toughest of times. There's an incredible culture around it. There's a lot to like about Union Berlin. But I think if you're selling it as a club who will be back competing for European spots anytime soon, that's probably a misnomer.
I just think, all right, so history and geography are important to him. Berlin is the place to be going. Doesn't want to go for one of the big guys. So that means you're ruling out Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich, probably it.
Well, you're ruling out Leverkusen because
you can't call it this season.
It's not fair.
No, you just can't start supporting Leverkusen this season. I suggested Leipzig last week. I can't just suggest Leipzig every. I do think Leipzig would kind of fit in with what he wants.
He just said history, mate.
Yeah, but he also had that thing where he likes being a fan from the offset, and Leipzig still feel like, because they were like bought, it kind of feels like a franchise that you're allowed to just pick up. But Union Berlin, atmosphere, incredible. Like, true to their roots, if you ever got to go to a game, it would be an incredible occasion. And can't just pick teams that are going to challenge to win leagues. Sometimes you need to be tested the other side of things and have a club that it's just a success to not go down and to pick up scalps along the way. And that's what Union Berlin are all about. So I'm sticking with that. You're welcome to pick an alternate, obviously. But that's my pick.
No, I like it. I like it. I think it's a good place to be. And as you say, we can't just pick the team in sixth in every league and be like, oh, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
You can look
at Frankfurt if you want. Frankfurt's not the worst pick in the world, but yeah.
No, that would work as well. But Union's nice. I like that. Well done. Good thinking. Which takes us to Ligue 1, where the depth is a little bit different. There is part of me that always just says to people, do you want some chaos? Do you want to go and support Marseille? Because they're the maddest club in the entire world, and following them must be a roller coaster of epic proportions. I do just kind of enjoy watching the chaos from afar. I can't imagine being wrapped completely up in that, but I do bear a kind of fight of, if you were really invested in this, it's a great club with great history. There's some mad scandals and bits and bobs in the 90s that you can read all into. And they were the only French club that's ever won the Champions League as well, on top of all of that. They do tend to be busy in the transfer market because they're a basket case. And you know, I can't promise you what the style of football is going to be like, because unfortunately, it seems to change every 3 months when they switch managers. But Gasse has them cooking a little bit at the moment, and they're just back on that hunt for a European spot. They feel like they're playing some interesting and dynamic football again. I'm quite excited about where Marseille are right now. So, yeah, maybe chuck them into the basket.
Yeah, okay. I've been in Marseille a few times and I haven't enjoyed any of the experiences because I find it quite a scary place. I genuinely find that stadium to be, outside of that stadium, it's terrifying. It really is. Like, the rich versus poor element of that city is actually like kind of crazy. I know that's not like across France, it can be like this anyway, but in Marseille, I felt it more than anything. And just there's just like, yeah, coves around that stadium. I remember running away from a game once in the dark. Like I covered a Chelsea match in Marseille and there had been trouble all night.
Well, the last thing you wanted to be doing with an English accent is being caught up in a dispute between Marseille and Chelsea fans, to be fair.
Mate, it was awful. And like the trains were down or something, I remember. And I just remember getting my work done. I think I interviewed Petr Cech maybe after the game in a mix zone. I remember getting it done and just running back to my hotel. It was not the best idea to just run, to be fair, because people just ultimately assume you're running from something and maybe chase you. But yeah, I'm a bit scared of Marseille. Although the port area, like, absolutely beautiful. Like, it's also a beautiful side to Marseille. Anyway, I would pick Lille based on this season. Watch a Lille game and you'll see a manager in Paulo Fonseca who I think is on the up. To be fair, he's on the up so much that he might even be there for next season if somebody decides to take a punt on him. They got Jonathan David up front. Again, might not be there next season. But they've had Lenny Yoro and Thiago Santos coming through in defence. They got Angel Gomez. They've got some really nice players to watch. They've got up to the higher echelons again of Ligue 1. I think they're fourth at the moment. Let me just double check that. Yeah, they're fourth moment. One place off Monaco in third. They've got a lot to play for this season. Lille are going to have an exciting end to this season. I think Lille's not a bad pick. Not the best city I've ever been to in the world, but there's some old stuff there that you can look at.
There's some old stuff there you can look at. There you go. There's a historical
element. I found it a bit boring, but I've been and it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, look, well, there you go. There's a couple of two very different options in France. But I think the rest of them feel a little bit more secure in terms of where you can go. So, Richie, let us know how you get on and who you pick with those ones. And if you're looking for a club outside your hometown club or your usual club and you want to hear the expert advice, as you can hear from both of us in this kind of scenario, then we'd love to hear from you. We'll keep doing this as long as we keep getting people asking us to help. But we hope you've enjoyed that, Mitchy. We hope that these clubs do well for you, or whoever you end up picking. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever today. We'll be back later on tonight, if you're listening on Wednesday, first thing Thursday morning, depending on where you are in the world, with a Champions League takeaway, looking back at the second legs of these round of 16 ties. The first four teams that will qualify for the quarterfinals and giving you our thoughts on all four of the games that take place across this week. For now, we'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, gang. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system, or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.